This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Live, you can join the show here to bring up anything that you want. The number is 603-283-6160. And we are talking overall about copyright and what's happened with the Internet Archive that was running a library and apparently still is. We'll get into some of the detail about what's going to continue after a federal court has ruled against the Internet Archive's emergency library, I think is what they were calling it, something to that effect. We'll continue the story here, but they basically were allowing people to take out electronic copies of real books that existed in a physical location, like a library.
Yeah, books they actually owned.
Right, and for a certain period of time, like a library, and then that electronic copy would somehow expire. I'd never actually went through the procedure myself.
There's got to be a way to do that and to get, I mean, if you have a lot of people involved in doing a thing, it's relatively easy. It seems like, simple it down to like a Docker app where, you know, once people have Docker up and running on their machine, they can just rent you the space like Amazon does.
You know, there is one way that you might be able to get around, at least for like movies and the streaming aspect of it, and it's renting the DVD drive and the internet connection and a computer for each of the discs,
and then streaming the movie over.
You're not streaming it. The user's streaming it, mm-hmm. because they're renting the DVD drive and they're renting the physical disc, and then they're clicking the stream button. So it's the user who's doing it.
That sounds like a really complicated system to put together.
What was the first? They had streaming service, the Napster. Before Napster came out, my solution to music sharing was I threw all of my music on an FTP server. And I left one account that had read-only access with the username and password of Cypherpunk.
This goes back a long time.
Because that was traditionally when they started having internet services. Every place you went, you could get in using Cypherpunk, because it was traditional to do that. So, and every once in a while, I'd look at the box and say, oh, somebody's downloading all my Grateful Dead.
And would people upload to it as well? Did they have upload rights?
No, I didn't give them any permission.
You know what's funny, Rich? I always wonder, what happened to those people, you know, like, that I was friends with, you know, back in the day on IRC and had those FTP servers, and oh, that's right, they're still my friends.
In New Hampshire, those people, all of a sudden, the internet filled up with idiots.
I think if you did the DVD streaming idea, where the user would be essentially streaming a copy of a movie to themselves, you'd end up with a lawsuit, because what happened was there was a company, it was probably close to a decade ago now, that had these little receivers.
Antennas. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they had them in...
I'm trying to think of their name.
I don't remember either. Yeah. But they had them in major cities, and they had like racks of these receivers, and they would give... You would sign up for a monthly fee, and you'd be able to watch over-the-air broadcast television on your computer, but it was a special stream that was specifically to you from your antenna, and they lost a lawsuit and went out of business.
It was a shared antenna. And that may have been part of the problem.
I had heard they had one antenna per customer. Is that what? That wasn't true?
Not as I understood it. I think it was one antenna, but each device. So think of it like this. Think of a bunch of USB adapters connected with TV tuners connected to one antenna, I believe is how it worked. And then,
Okay, that's not what I'd heard about.
But the thing that they couldn't screw you for If you found the way to do the data processing to keep people honest is just physically swapping DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
it's getting harder now because not as many people buy them.
Who's got a DVD player?
I have one.
Yeah.
I have a Blu-ray player. Hey, I still sell DVD players, and we actually sell more DVD players than we sell Blu-ray players.
Is that right?
Still, yeah, but it's...
You mean on drives for a computer, right?
Yeah, computers. Yeah. But nonetheless, the point is that they're still out there. It's just not anywhere near as much as demand is in the 90s.
See, I haven't had anything like that on my computer for years. If I can't download it, I don't watch it.
Yeah, I actually don't have DVD players in my computers anymore, but I do have an old PlayStation 3 that'll play Blu-rays.
And we're bringing back the DVD player, apparently, in our generation.
Hey, let's go to the phones here. I got Ricky on the line in Pennsylvania. Ricky, what's on your mind tonight?
Thank you there, brother. And who will be the co-host tonight?
We have Chris and Nobody. What's on your mind, Ricky?
Brother Chris and Brother Nobody. Good evening. Well, what I said here, when you monitored me, links into this, and it made me think of what my topic is, and I'll try to make it as concise as possible. First is what Social Security disability, and Social Security insurance are, and then the differences between SSD and SSI, if I may.
God, I hope this can be interesting.
Are you asking me about this?
I will make this. I'm not asking anything. I'll make this easy, if I may.
Okay.
Now, Social Security, simple. That's money you put into Social Security.
The people who trust it are simple.
It is simple if you let me, Nobody. Now,
what were you saying?
Security, it is simple. Social Security is based on what you put in. You can take full benefits and receive them at 67, partial at 65.
Now, it is money that they're stealing from the younger generations. They already spent the money you put in.
Yeah, it's the old people of America cutting themselves a nice, juicy slice of us.
Yeah, very similar. Very similar to a pyramid scheme.
This?
Huh?
Okay, now SSD. SSD is the same thing. The only
difference
is
Social Security disability.
Right. It's the same thing. The only difference is you're taking it before 65 based on a disability because you can no longer
work. Or a purported one. I mean, that's what...
So it's the SS, but on a DD.
That's what Sarah, who's a regular caller of this show, claims. She claims she's disabled.
But she's never worked.
Right. Yeah. Sarah is the example I'm going to use for SSI, if I may, Ian.
No, she's on SSD.
No, she gets SSI. She made that clear many times.
No, she does not. She's not old enough for that.
No, SSI is Social Security in insurance. That's what they used to give the...
Right, they give that to people that have
crazy homeless people back
in
the day.
She never worked.
Oh, I thought it was more military.
No, she claims she's disabled. That's why she can't work. She claims she's got bipolar.
If I may, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
Now... Social Security insurance is given to people that never have any work to claim on. Okay, that's that. Now, here's the differences.
Okay, so that's straight-up welfare, right? Social Security insurance?
Basically, and that's why I'm linking into this, if I may. Now, in the case of me, because of my recent blindness, I claimed SSD. They are the same. The two are the same, SSD and SS. The only difference is you take the early amount before 65, and I lost several hundred dollars a month because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the same. Now, here's the rules compared to SSD and SSI. Now, examples.
Wait, I thought you were on SSD because you're blind.
That's right. Okay. Sarah's on SSI, I promise you.
Okay.
Now, on SSD.
Why are you telling us about this, though?
I'm going to, if you let me finish, you'll know. Now, in the case of SSD, you can have as much money in your bank account as you want, but in the case of SSI, you can only have in your bank account the amount of two of the equivalent checks, on an average are $800 to $1,000. That's one thing.
What if you keep in the crypto wallet?
Here's another difference, Ian. Here's a better difference. In my case, I own property. It's valued at $150,000. I pay taxes on it. Sarah cannot own that. That's why she rents. Now, there's more. When it comes down to it,
I'm still not understanding where you're going with this. Unless...
Because here's the difference. Also, when it comes to Medicare, I have
are
to
you,
pay
Are you advising us to go on welfare? are you just giving us a lecture on all the various stupid
Nobody,
things that
I'm
our
not.
Money is wasted on
it.
When
I
it's stolen?
It
I think it's
a,
that. I think he's lecturing.
There is actually a legit point here, though. I think that you can...
I did learn something. I didn't
money.
Know
you
that.
You can
get out of this. And that is... If you're a libertarian, you know, the one you're paying into and the other you're not, one we should sort of be not as upset about and the other we should be more upset about.
Well, I don't think we should be upset about people who take money from the government. I think we should be upset about people who give money to the government. Because those are the rat bastards who give them the resources to abuse us.
I mean, it is.
I mean, if we ever got serious about taking the government out, what we would be doing is quitting our jobs, going on welfare, and then using all of our extra time to do activism
now,
on the government's
may
dime.
May I make a comment, nobody?
Go ahead.
May I make a comment to this? See, in my case, this is money that was put in. Someone like Sarah never put anything into Social Security at all. So it's my money. I'm just claiming it early.
No, it's not your money anymore. They've taken it from you.
Yeah, once
something's
been stolen from you, it's not yours anymore.
Well, still, I should take what I put in anyways. I'll never get it all.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sure. The government basically owes every human being an infinite amount of damages because they've stolen priceless things from you, not just your money. And, you know, when I was making $250,000 as a computer programmer, I paid a lot in taxes, especially since I didn't have time to putz around
with
it.
Well, they stole your ability to spend that money how you wanted to spend it at the time you would have had it.
Stole a year of my life for
your retirement,
weed, which I did because I refused to take welfare, and I also refused to work for the monsters I was working for before. So yeah, I mean, imagine if 25% of the most productive people in America just said, nah, screw you guys. I don't feel like working anymore. How long would the dollar last?
We may actually be having that situation right now.
I have something very much like. I mean, what was the original title of Atlas Shrugged? Do you know?
No, I don't.
It was called The Strike.
I have a little bit of a difficult time getting upset with people taking money from the government when they're taking money that was stolen from them by the government in the first place. But, you know, at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to advocate for Social Security or keeping it, right?
Well, I don't advocate for keeping it. I advocate for, I mean, a fool and his money are soon parted. So let's part the fools from all the money, and then they'll have to find something productive to do.
Thank you, Ricky, for the call tonight. Let's go to Sam in Ohio. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on what you're talking about, taxes. To me, from my perspective, the thing that I see the most is the sales tax here in Ohio.
No sales tax in New Hampshire.
Booyah! Yeah, that's the sales tax is
just on prepared food.
It's just a tiny itty bitty percentage of all your taxes that you're paying
and hotel,
and you just don't even know
on
it.
Where you cases. Are. In some places, sales tax is crazy.
10% in some places.
13% in some places.
Wow!
But
where in California,
here in Ohio, it's only 7.5%. Fortunately, where I'm at, but still, it's too much.
Special administrative districts in New Jersey, and they also exist elsewhere. But yeah,
wow. Insane.
See, I kind of like the idea of the fair tax with just one modification to it, which is government's not responsible for my existence. I was created by either God or nature. But there are some people, if you want to call them that, that do owe their entire existence to government. They're called corporations. So if you hacked the fair tax and said it only applies when you buy things from a corporation, but if you buy something at a gas station, or if you buy, if you buy something from a sole proprietor,
or a mom and pop
shop, then you don't have to pay, then that's fine because the corporations get all the benefits from taxation anyway. Mm-hmm. They actually get things from the government besides having tanks driven into their house and being thrown in prison for weed. Yeah. So,
Sam, what
else? Or spent off of the rest of your life for just simply selling Bitcoin legally.
Yeah, they wanted to throw me in prison for 30 years.
Yeah, no. They're proposing 37 months for Aria, by the way, for the sentencing coming up in, what, like 10 days from now, basically?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Based on the supposition that they think she might have guessed that some of the people she was selling to were idiots.
But what was interesting about that is during the hearing that they referenced, or trial, sorry, the Crypto 6 trial that they referenced in your case, Ian, at no point did they ever actually bring up anything, any evidence that she or you knew that at the time anybody was being scammed.
No, there was not a shred of evidence.
Their own evidence contradicts what they said about, like, doing nothing.
The bank was stolen from is what they said.
Well, that was originally, they ended up abandoning that argument. They never actually said the banks were stolen from.
They did in the memorandum with Aria.
Early on, they said that the banks were, quote unquote, defrauded, but they didn't actually say the banks lost anything.
That's
and
true.
That's what the so-called wire fraud charge.
Which is supposed to be impossible. The thing about wire fraud is it's not actually fraud. For example, it was never considered fraud if you lied to somebody to get them to lend you money. So unless they could prove that you had no intention of paying it back. If you didn't deprive them of something that was theirs, it wasn't considered fraud. But wire fraud is not fraud. It's more like contempt of bank.
Let's talk about credit card fraud. You know, it's funny. People think that they're the victims of credit card fraud when their credit card is used. It's actually the merchants who are the victims, and it's the costs get passed on to you. So it's really just anybody who's a consumer is the one who's negatively impacted by it.
How much would you lose if you just refused to take credit cards?
99% of your business in most cases.
Yeah.
Credit cards are huge, especially with at least the internet. But that might be a little bit of an exaggeration.
2 by 3 inches.
It's a little bit of an exaggeration because technically there's also wire transfers. If you have like large corporations purchasing stuff from you, which also is going to be a huge percentage probably. That's actually probably like, honestly, it's probably like a third of probably like our business.
It costs like $35 to make a wire transfer.
Yeah, but if you're buying $100,000,
that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. It's not so wire transfer fees aren't bad if you're doing $100,000, transactions. It's when
and
you're
big
making
companies sometimes
small
have bank accounts that'll do it free. Like if you've got like a platinum bank account, one of the perks sometimes of the highest level bank accounts is they waive the wire fees. So, I mean, you're holding a million or more than $1 million with the bank or whatever, and they're like, yeah, you can have free wires. So that happens, too. Sam, anything else you want to share?
If you're poor, they're going to screw you.
Oh, yeah. Sam?
Hear any more news about FedNow?
No. What you're referring to is a program that the Federal Reserve is supposed to be implementing this summer that will be a interbank transfer system that would allow for purportedly for 24/7 near instantaneous transfers between banks and bank accounts.
And also would allow for 24/7 surveillance of everything you do with your money.
Yeah.
It would allow for them to say, yeah, we don't like it when that guy spends money because he liked the Canadian truckers, so we're only going to let him buy diapers from now on.
Some people
he doesn't have any kids.
Some people are saying FedNow is the first step to the implementation of the CBDC, which they haven't yet, quote, authorized, and they're still looking into. So it'll allow purportedly for no need to do the 2 to 3 day ACH transfer. You can just instantaneously transfer.
The humorous thing about that, actually, though, is that instant transfers are the reason we don't have instant transfers. Part of that is basically because, like, it's fraud. It's an opportunity for somebody to come back and be like, oh, hey, I didn't authorize that, right?
Well, they can still do that with the other systems.
But
it happens all the time. That's why
you're right.
That's why companies, when you buy Bitcoin from some of these online exchanges, you can ACH your money in, and they'll show the balance immediately, and you can buy the Bitcoin, but they won't let you withdraw it for several days.
Yeah, because you can cancel the ACH transfer. It's like a check. An ACH transfer is just like a check. So there's a certain amount of time that you can cancel a check.
And I'm sure that'll be true with FedNow as well. No news about that, Sam. Thank you for the call tonight. I appreciate it. Let me bring David on here from Georgia. David, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
So, Ricky from the Commonwealth brought up SSI and SSDI. And I would like to point out that as another blind individual, getting a job is dang near impossible. I applied I applied for a job in an apartment building, like working, you know, front desk, taking calls and stuff like that for an apartment complex. Got to the interview, did the interview, everything went fine, heard nothing. I applied for a job at McDonald's, for crying out loud. Did the interview, everything went fine, heard nothing. You just never hear back from these people when you go and next to the interview because they see you're blind. They don't say that's why they don't want to hire you because of the equal opportunity employment clauses and stuff like that. So they won't.
Well, if it was up to me, I would definitely hire you to be a bodyguard for Joe Biden.
Yeah, you got it. This is one of these things where there's actually a lot of companies do a lot of really, dishonest, I don't know if dishonest is quite the right word, but really sneaky kind of stuff when it comes to their hiring practices. And it's not, I am sure that what you're encountering is real, but there's a lot of other stuff that they do too, besides that, that affects a lot of people. Like, for example, they'll advertise $20 an hour and then they don't actually have any positions that are $20 an hour. And, you know, you get $10 an hour when you actually, after you go through the interview, like just as an example. But you know, the other thing I was thinking was, you probably, if you're blind, one of the better things to do is try to get yourself into a career path where you don't actually have to show up to work. Like if it's online,
that sounds like a good job for me.
Yeah, like telemarketing or something. I know it's kind of scummy, but you know, something you can do over the
telemarketing, system administration, computers. That kind of stuff is probably what I would do if I were blind, just because those are things. I mean, I'm already a tech person, but those are things that you can definitely more easily do without problems,
David, go ahead.
I've honestly, I've done enough applying and interviews, and at this point, I've just stopped looking.
Wow, that's brutal. Thank you for the call tonight, David. I appreciate hearing from you. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. You can absolutely bring up anything that is on your mind. And there's more coming up. This is Free Talk Live. You can join us, 603-283-6160.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. Former President Trump is rallying against President Biden's gun control agenda. While speaking at the NRA's annual meeting in Indianapolis, Trump told the crowd, "No one will lay a finger on your guns if he's elected president in 2024. The Supreme Court is lifting restrictions on a commonly used abortion pill for now. Justice Samuel Alito blocked lower court rulings that imposed restrictions on the drug. Alito said the hold will remain in effect until midnight on Wednesday. President Biden gave a speech at a famous cathedral in Ireland to cap off his trip abroad. He spoke of relatives who have ties to the country and the fondness he feels towards the people of Ireland. He also touted the tight bond between the U.S. and the country.
Everything between Ireland and America runs deep. Our history, our heritage, our sorrows, our future, our friendship, our joy.
Dave Collins, USA News.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while, we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track, not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and Save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, and the phones are open here. If you want to join the show, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And you can join us online anytime you want over at freetalklive.com. Enjoy the features we have. We have our own social media platform. You can go over to social.freetalklive.com. is our Mastodon system. That means it's open source. It means we run the server, and you get more freedom to speak than you do on places like Twitter and Facebook. But go and see it for yourself over at social.freetalklive.com. It's Ian, Nobody, and Chris in the studio here tonight. Let's go continuing with, I think, not quite three callers in a row, but three blind guys calling in here. We got the third one. Riley is on the line.
Are you sure they're not mice?
I've met Riley. He does not look like a mouse. In fact, he's coming here in a few days. To join us in real life. He's going to be visiting up here in New Hampshire. He's the guy that does the Daily Digest. So if you listen to Free Talk Live's Daily Digest, you have Riley to thank for that. But Riley...
Which reminds me, if you happen to be in New Hampshire, we're going to be doing a 420 rally out on the steps of the State House. That's always fun.
It's been a while. It's been a few years, right, since we did
sometimes
that.
You get state cops threatening us, and sometimes we get politicians smoking with us. You never know what you're going to get.
Anyway, Riley, what's up?
I I'm looking forward to participating in the 420 rally. I'm excited for it. I've never done one in New Hampshire. I've always celebrated 420 with friends, but, you know, they're not willing to go to the state capitol.
Yeah, you'll probably go to prison in Utah for something like that, right? Like, what are the what's the punishment there?
I don't know. I haven't really looked into it. I just know that, you know, it's only criminalized for medical. I don't know what it would be if I really chose to pursue that route. But anyway, I wanted to talk about finding jobs as a blind person because David in Georgia talked about it. And, you know, Chris gave some really good suggestions about going into tech support and doing things like that. You know, blind people can do programming. But I went into doing audio production because I like audio. I've wanted to do talk radio since I was a kid. And so naturally I decided that I would rather do audio. And here I am doing the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. So if you're a blind listener, I would recommend developing a skill and trying to market that skill. And hopefully someone will pick you up. And if not, you know, you might have to start your own business, even if you have to network with other blind people.
Riley, I was just thinking the same thing. Start your own business. So many people don't think about it. It's like, why not start?
You're throwing me in jail whenever I do that.
Well, yeah, okay. But I'll give you that. But no, I mean, so many people don't even think about this. And it's not whether you're blind or not, but, like, you know, people complain about, oh, I can't find a job or it's so hard to find a job. Okay, well, you know, there are other things you can do. You can start your own business.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Riley, and we should be forthcoming here, there was a time when you were being paid. It was relatively short to do the Daily Digest, and that was a time when we had a fair amount of advertiser support, and unfortunately, and you were the exclusive podcast. We had gotten rid of our full radio show at the time, and then we switched back, and so that isn't happening. So at this time, you are taking full entrepreneurial, which means you're not getting paid. You're getting donations. You do have donations. Right. Information on every episode of the Daily Digest, and I don't know, you know, obviously that's up to you to decide whether that makes it worth your while to continue, and you do continue, so I presume that makes it worthwhile. I hope it is.
Well, hey, if you want to do some if you want to produce, I've been trying to hire the captain, but he's not biting. But basically, if I can find a producer, then 90% of whatever is raised can go to them. I'll take the other 2 and the other 10. If and when that becomes enough that you think it's a good idea, you can give me a raise.
You're talking about doing fundraising?
Yeah, well, basically, I mean, what I was thinking with the captains, it's a lot easier for me to get on the radio and say, hey, send the captain some money than it is for me to say, send me some money.
Yeah. Why is that easier?
I don't know. I don't like asking people for money, which is probably why I mean, people are always telling me, I love what you do, I love it when you do this, and I love it when you do this, and I'm, well, put some money in my hand, why don't you?
You're right. I wish people would do that, too.
You know what's funny about this is I hear this so often from other people, and I'm like, just, you know, I even know somebody who had a page with, like, crypto links, donation links on it, and he was getting a ton of money every month from it, and he stopped doing it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Put that back. Put it back up. It's like you're turning down good money. Stop it.
That's
it's not
crazy.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. I don't even understand the logic. Like.
Well, do you know somebody who's good at asking people for money? Maybe we can, I think that would actually be a great thing if somebody started producing Liberty material, producing as a producer rather than the people who spend their time on the air doing it all.
I think it comes down to is if you're producing something of value, right, and you're just giving it away, right, and you're not charging anybody for it, what is so wrong with asking, you know, putting up a link and being like, hey, if you appreciate this, you know, this work, you know, you can help contribute to it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Whether or not I'm producing anything of value, see, seems to be a matter of some debate.
Well, let the people, you know, let the people who want to contribute, contribute. And if they don't, well, that's cool, too. You know, it's like,
yeah, well, I was
actually going to do that. I started bringing up Flipstarter, but then I started rewriting Flipstarter, and I was like, oh, God, this is going to be a rabbit hole. And so I just said, screw it.
I think we've actually got one of the programmers that listens to the show. His name is Saheed. He is a regular contributor on our chat server. So anyway, you're referring to Flipstarter, which is a Bitcoin Cash kind of a chip-in, if you will, or a donation thing. Mm-hmm. Riley, anything else you want to share tonight?
The only thing I want to share is I'm looking forward to being back in New Hampshire. I'm visiting my girlfriend in Pennsylvania right now, and I'm getting up there in a few days.
All right, man. We'll see you when you get here, and thanks for the call tonight.
Sounds good.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see you.
If you're blind and unemployed and you can't right? find a job, start raising some money, and 9 out of every $10 you raise will go to you.
All right, the number here is 603-283-6160. I want to continue with the Internet Archive story because we didn't get to finish it. It's from The Verge, and it's about this Internet Archive library that has unfortunately lost a federal court case against it. It wasn't criminal. It was a civil case brought by 4 publishing companies, HarperCollins, John Wiley & Sons, and Penguin Random House, as well as Hachette, that brought the case, and the judge ruled in the favor of the publishing companies, telling that Internet Archive, they needed to shut down their what they called the National Emergency Library, which had 1.4 million digitized books with no waiting list. And the Internet Archive says it will continue acting as a library in other ways despite the decision. They said, this case does not challenge many of the services we provide with digitized books, including interlibrary loan, citation linking, access for the print-disabled, text and data mining, purchasing e-books, and ongoing donation and preservation of books, wrote their spokesperson and the president of the... So, you had mentioned, I don't know if this story, it doesn't get into it here, Chris, but you had said that this National Emergency Library had some way of issuing books to people that were backed by physical copies.
Yeah, that was my understanding. It was, I think, an extension. It was an extension of their own books, but like it was other libraries that
but
they were.
But wouldn't that be
with.
The interlibrary loan that he was talking about?
Interlibrary loan sends physical
books. So. Yeah, interlibrary, that's my understanding.
Well, I don't think the Internet Archive is sending physical books.
No, the Internet Archive isn't.
They have a program.
Oh, really?
That they say that this case does not challenge many of the services we provide with digitized books, including interlibrary loans. So I think that what they did, it sounds like what they did was they just opened up the floodgates on their library and disabled the restrictions using the pandemic as the excuse. And it's not made clear here, but that's the way this sounds.
So let me back up a moment and just say this. Is the information that has been reported seems to have been inaccurate in mm-hmm. all sorts of different ways. And every time I read a different article, it says something slightly different. So it could be that we're just all misunderstanding.
Here's their
what's
own close the post.
Do you know anybody over there?
I don't. I've only
The Verge links to Archive's Wayback Machine, their blog, from March 30th of 2020. This is where they explained what they were doing.
Yep. Okay.
So this is also from Chris Freeland, who was the spokesperson we were talking about earlier, and they talk about the 1.4 million digitized books available to users without a wait list in response to the rolling wave of school and library closures that remain in place to date. So again, libraries were physically closing due to COVID restrictions. They say we've received dozens of messages of thanks from teachers and school librarians who can now help their students access books while their schools, school libraries, and public libraries are closed. We've been asked why we suspended the waiting list. So the waiting list would have been the way the old system worked, where you would rent a book out, and then that book wouldn't be available. You'd have to get on a list, and then you'd get it eventually. On March 17th, the American Library Association Executive Board took the extraordinary step to recommend that the nation's libraries close in response to COVID-19. In doing so, for the first time in history, the entirety of the nation's print collection housed in libraries is now unavailable, locked away indefinitely behind closed doors.
I wonder how many of them kept getting paid when they weren't doing anything.
Government budgets? I imagine all of them did. except for the private ones, you know, and they get donations. Ooh. So, according to IMLS, the public library survey in fiscal year 17, there were more than 716 million physical books in U.S. public libraries during the same, or using the same data, which shows a 2 to 3% decline in collection holdings per year. We can estimate that public libraries have about 650 million books on their shelves in 2020. Right now, today, there are 650 million books that taxpaying citizens have paid to access that are sitting on shelves in closed libraries inaccessible to them. And so, to meet this unprecedented need at a scale never before seen, we suspended waitlists on our lending collection. As we anticipated, critics, including the Authors Guild and the Association of American Publishers, have released statements condemning the National Emergency Library and the Internet Archive. Both statements contain falsehoods that are being spread widely online. And then they have frequently asked questions regarding that. So they go on to say one of the statements...
Reminds me of Metallica. It's like going all whiny over over Napster. And it's like, you guys are richer than God. What do you care?
Yeah, maybe the publishing company saw this as you know, an imposition on their ability to make more money during the pandemic. They probably
saw it as an opportunity to steal some money from good people who are trying to help somebody.
Well, yeah, that is a good point. We don't know what the sentence or what they call the settlement or whatever will be in this civil case against Internet Archive, because they probably will be ordered to send a bunch of money over to these publishers. That part of the case hasn't happened yet. It was just the ruling against them that has happened. So, like, we've been waiting for that detail in the library case where the SEC sued LBRY.com for allowing people to share videos online, essentially, even though that's not the reason the lawsuit was filed. That's probably the real reason behind it.
It may not be the excuse, but I'm sure that not silencing anybody who was trying to tell the truth was a reason, even if it wasn't the excuse.
So they basically, it sounds like they put themselves in more kind of legal jeopardy by making this move to not have the wait list backing the ebooks that they were sharing out during COVID-19.
Does it get into any
further detail, though, on there? So them saying what they did? Because it seems like it's very misleading as far as stories that are written about it. They seem to be slanted in a way, because I know that I read about exceptions in the copyright law that allows them to do this, which is why I...
Here's the detail. So how is the National Emergency Library, what this lawsuit was about, different from the Internet Archive's normal digital lending? They say because libraries and around the country and globe are closed due to COVID-19, Internet Archive has suspended our wait list temporarily. That means that multiple readers can access a digital book simultaneously. Yet, still by borrowing the book, meaning that it is returned after 2 weeks and cannot be redistributed. So restrictions were still in place. As they point out here, readers who borrow the book from the National Emergency Library do get it just for the two-week period, and their access is disabled unless they check out the book again. Internet Archive uses the same technical protections that publishers use on their ebook offerings in order to prevent additional copies from being made or redistributed. So they did still have restrictions on them. It's just the one restriction they lifted was the one-out-at-a-time restriction. They would lend out an unlimited number of them for two-week periods to receivers. So that clears it up a little bit more. But here's their answer to the question of what about those who say we're stealing from authors and publishers? They say libraries buy books or get them from donations and lend them out. This has been true and legal for centuries. The idea that this is stealing fundamentally misunderstands the role of libraries in the information ecosystem. And then they cite Professor Ariel Katz in a paper on copyright, saying, historically, libraries predate copyright, and the institutional role of libraries in institutions of higher learning in the promotion of science and the encouragement of learning was acknowledged before legislators decided to grant authors exclusive rights in their writings. The historical precedence of libraries and the legal recognition of their public function cannot determine every contemporary copyright question, but this historical fact is not devoid of legal consequence. As long as the copyright ecosystem has a public purpose, then some of the functions that libraries perform are not only fundamental, but also indispensable for attaining this purpose. Therefore, the legal rules that allow libraries to perform these functions remain and will continue to be as integral to the copyright system as copyright itself. So, and some of these questions just seem more about their general library system. And they said they were only suspending the wait list through June 30th of 2020 or the end of the U.S. national emergency, which I believe just happened this week.
Last week, yeah.
Biden finally signed some sort of waiver or whatever ending the national emergency. So that does clarify a little
bit more.
Doesn't
mean he's going to stop looting us, though.
No doubt. No doubt. So that does clear it up a little bit. And again, the Internet Archive is going to continue doing the lending that they had been doing. So the library itself has not been shut down. Here's what the publishers, the bad guys, had to say in their statement. This is from the Association of American Publishers, saying that the publishing community is grateful to the court for its unequivocal affirmation of the Copyright Act and for respect and respect for established precedent in rejecting arguments that would have pushed fair use to illogical markers. The court has underscored the importance of authors, publishers, and creative markets in global society. In celebrating the opinion, we also thank the thousands of public libraries across the country that serve their communities every day through lawful e-book licenses. We hope the opinion will prove educational to the defendant and anyone else who finds public laws inconvenient to their own interests.
I hope they choke on a lie and die.
The thing that still leaves me confused about this, after having read the Internet Archives explanation of it, is how does that exception in the law then apply that's relating to libraries?
Well, the thing is, it doesn't matter what you do. What matters is who you are. What connections you have, what privileges you have. If you're a nobody, you're not going to get a fair shake in court. But if you've been donating to the Democrats for years, then yeah. Whatever you do, you're not going to get busted.
Yeah, it still seems like there's some bit of information that we're missing here that I'm not clear on, because if you read,
it's all part of the Just Us system. Who does it work for? The judges say Just Us.
There's definitely some content out there somewhere where it's sort of explained in a little bit more detail, I think, why there is an exception and what the archive's defense is, and there was some sort of exception explicitly within the law for libraries.
Yeah, but I don't think that it didn't sound like that's what they were arguing. It sounded like they were arguing some sort of fair use thing, because the exception wouldn't apply to unlimited checkouts, right? Like that was the rule that changed.
Right. It's not clear to me at this point, like based on what you were reading there, what the story is, because that was my understanding of what the defense was, is that there was a carve out for libraries. So how would that apply?
There is no like libraries can't just. Well, first of all, they just
libraries have
books.
To pay for licenses and
not on
and,
physical books.
Right. Not on e-books. Physical books, but apparently on e-books.
Yes,
they do.
Yes,
according
that's right.
to that,
that's right.
According to that
statement by
the publishers that was read, and you know it. It makes sense to some extent. I mean, they also lend out records, and I'm sure there are licensing limitations on that, too.
There's also an unclear aspect of this, too, still. So normally, libraries typically have licensed the content for redistribution, not bought a book and redistributed an electronic copy unlimited number of times.
Correct.
So it's not clear to me if the Internet Archive is continuing to purchase books.
They are.
Physical books and
they're
lending
continuing.
Out digital copies.
Correct.
Because if
they
that's the case, then they're not licensing for redistribution the content from the publishers, directly.
Correct.
Like other libraries are.
Right. Yeah, they're doing something different, but that wasn't what the lawsuit was about.
Right, which is why
it gets
very confusing.
If they'd kept doing it the way they were doing it, I don't think these companies would have sued. But they weren't doing it that way. They opened up the floodgates for unlimited checkouts of the one physical, the digital versions of the single physical copies that they had. And I think that's where these companies said, okay, now we can pounce.
So the question then becomes, is if that's the case, then what was their defense? Because my understanding of what their defense was the carve out with the exception. That doesn't make sense.
Fair use.
Explanation to, you know, the exception. Maybe they made a fair use argument as opposed to that exception argument in the court.
Well,
in
there's
defense
a
of this 47
page ruling here if you want to look through it. Usually judges will
47 pages.
Usually a judge will summarize the arguments of the plaintiffs. They'll summarize the arguments of the plaintiffs and they'll summarize the arguments of the defendants and then reject one of them, right? So that may be a way to get some idea of what the arguments were without having to sit through hours and hours of
Sure I'd be interested in hearing the judge's conclusion so much as I'd be interested in hearing what the argument was from the Internet Archive perspective.
Oh, well, generally the judge will summarize both
that's what I was
arguments.
That might be, but as we all know, they will misinterpret stuff. They will misunderstand stuff. You know, they could have had a perfectly sound argument, and the judge just didn't understand their argument. You know, the blockchain is a person, as we all know.
Yeah, I'm looking right now at battleforlibraries.com. I was hoping they would have it because that's the Internet Archive's site here that is kind of, you know, doing a fundraiser and letting people sign up for updates and that sort of thing. So this would be where to go to support them on this. And I'm looking at their frequently asked questions, and there's nothing jumping out at me about, like, here's what our argument was. It just, you know, how can you support the archive? What's happening? That kind of thing. And then what's the next step in the lawsuit, which, of course, is appealing. So let's see. This is what it says here. Publishers are arguing that it's not okay to scan a copyrighted book, keep a paper copy in storage, and loan out the digital file on a one-to-one ratio, just like any library loans any other kind of book. But that's not what the suit was.
Well, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's very confusing as to what they did and what their defense is to what they're being accused of.
Well, anyway, if you want to learn more from their side of things, go to battleforlibraries.com. We'll put this Verge story up over at our social media. You can follow the FTL account there to get show prep links and things like that. The Verge story does have within it the 40-something page ruling in this case, and that might give you some idea of, you know, obviously if you really want to dig into it, you can go and pull up Pacer or
I unfortunately
listener.
Do not have that kind of time.
Those of you listening, though, if you wanted to pull
ain't
up.
Nobody got time for
it. You know, it's definitely an interesting case. I would love to look into it. There's just other cases that I'm also keeping more closer attention to, and they also take up a lot of time. So,
okay, so they say here that the defendant contends that it is not liable for copyright infringement because it is making fair use of the works in the suit. So again, this is according to the summary by the judge in this case. And usually judges will summarize things correctly. They just will then rule in favor of the government.
You got a lot more faith than me.
See, the funny thing about that is if that was the issue, that they were lending out too many copies, what they should have done is call up all the closed libraries and say, hey, could you lend me all of the books that are locked in your closed library so that we can lend electronic copies out?
That was my understanding of what they did.
Yeah, but how are they going to call the library? There's no one there. Answer the phone. It was during COVID. There's more coming up.
Librarians have.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there's some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about extreme weather, the alarming increase in man-made disasters, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare. And the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on their popular 3-month emergency food kit. They include tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners with over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. For a limited time, save $200 plus get free shipping on your 3-month supply at MyPatriotSupply.com. Too many Americans are being let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at TeamG'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. TeamG'day.com. TeamG'day.com.
frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.